Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of my podcast. We have a very special guest today joining all the way from UK. We got Keith Attack joining the podcast. Hi Keith.
Hi Chana, how are you?
I'm good. How's the morning in the UK?
Hey, you're just saying it's you're 5 p.m. in the afternoon, yeah?
Yeah, it's 5 p.m. for me.
I'm having my morning tea. It's 10 a.m. here.
Right. How's the weather?
I'm in true musician style. I haven't been up very long.
Right. So, Keith, how's the weather there?
It's lovely, actually. Yeah, it's good. We're coming out of winter now. It's been its usual freezing British winter, but a lot of rain, a lot of floods and stuff. But no, we're all right now. It's a beautiful day outside.
Right. So, you know, like we came out of this pandemic COVID thing for the last 2 years, which was there. So how is the situation now in the UK? Is everything, all the restrictions gone?
There's still a lot of caution. The restrictions, I have to say, from where I can see, the vaccination programs have been quite incredible. I know they've come up. There's a lot of kind of divisiveness about them, but you know, we're pretty much back to normal. And I was listening to the radio yesterday, and the statistics for COVID have gone really down. And you know, the Brits, they're a nation of, they're very gregarious, friendly. They like their events, they like their holidays, they like their pubs, restaurants, you know, and it's been very tough on them, you know, it's been tough on us all, like, you know, and so there is a lot of normality now coming back, right. I'm glad to see.
Right. How about the live music?
The live music in the clubs and the pubs is great. The live music in the theatres, again, there's a bit of caution with that, you know, and I think the live events in the theatres, not just for music, I think the live events, they'll take a little bit more time for people to gain their confidence again back in theatre world. I've just got to clear the screens. I keep getting a message there. There's a lot of caution still, but again, it's improving all the time.
Right. So recently I went to, like, you know, a couple of local concerts here, and one thing that I felt is I felt quite awkward because, like, I was trying to shake somebody's hand, and they wanted to do a fist bump. And then I wasn't sure whether I should hug that person or not. So
yeah.
Kind of awkward, right?
Yeah, I think that's everywhere still. You don't, you don't quite know how to be. Yeah. Yeah, right. I see that quite a fair amount. Yeah. everywhere.
Keith, yeah. So Keith, tell me, like, how was this pandemic, like, personally affected you?
Well, at first, like everything, to be honest, I'd been so kind of busy up till the pandemic, and then the pandemic arrived, which wasn't, at first, it was quite, not having gone through any of this before, like us all, it was quite hard to believe the effect that it had. And then all of a sudden we were all told to stay at home. That's unheard of, obviously, everywhere. I was very lucky in a way, because I live a lot of the time. I have a partner and a dog. My family are in the south, but I work in the north. I live in the north with my work. I have my studio. Fortunately, I have my studio in my home, so I was able to still work. I work a lot on my own writing and recording anyway. So it was actually. It was actually a very productive time for me, because I could stay at home, I could write music, I could write songs, I could develop the things that I really didn't have time for when before the pandemic, because I've working with other bands and artists and things. I really kind of crave time of my own to do my own thing. So in that respect, it was actually been very good for me. Not good, obviously, you know, I mean, my mum's still alive. So fortunately we had to make sure she was all right. Not good, obviously, for the loss of so many people, but on a personal basis, I do have to say I got off light, really. I have had the virus though since, and I was quite poorly with it just before one of my daughter's weddings, and it was a little bit hit and miss whether I would even make it, you know, to the wedding. Not make it. I wasn't hospitalized, but I was very unwell with it last summer. Going into my daughter's wedding, I fortunately got clear and got well enough to be there and safe enough to be there.
Right.
So we've all been affected. Yeah. So good and bad, but on a creative front, I put the time to good use. I thought to myself, don't just fall in the trap of going and getting a bottle of wine open every 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, I kept fairly disciplined with myself.
Right. So even Keith, this podcast actually started because of the pandemic. Because before that, I was just a fan. I was just going to the live shows, and then all the shows got canceled. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't travel. So I thought, why not just start talking about music? And then that's how this podcast actually started.
Well, there you go. It's the same thing. You probably wouldn't, we wouldn't be talking. You probably, is your podcast the result of being in lockdown?
Yes.
Well, there you go. And so you turned it around as well. That's good.
Yeah. So Keith, before we talk about the band and, you know, music, I want to ask you, tell me a little bit about your childhood and what's your earliest memory of music?
Well, my dad was a musician. My brothers are musicians. My dad was a pianist, jazz pianist, and in the north of England, and they were very respected in the big bands in those years. It was like that would be in the 1950s. You know, there was always musicians around the house. You know, they'd be calling on him, and I always remember there was loads of guys always turning up to pick him up, and they all had evening dress on, and, you know, because they were going out, dad was playing with them all, and, you know, he was always working. And so it was just natural for my brothers and I to start on playing the piano. We learned classical piano from an 8-year-old. So there was always music in the house. My mum's a music lover, and she's still with us now. She's 90. She's always a big music lover. So, and, you know, we grew up like everybody in the UK in the 60s with the Beatles and all the British music scene, you know. So it was a great time to grow up. For the music scene in the UK.
Right. So at what age did you pick up the guitar?
I think I was relatively late to the guitar. I was about 12, which is, you know, a lot of kids nowadays, that, you know, they pick up the guitar from being, you know, an earlier age. I always loved the guitar. I mean, from being day one, I always had imaginary guitars. I had things that weren't guitars because, you know, mum and dad, we had a lot of money. And so to have a guitar in the house would have been impossible, you know, at the time. So, but I remember my brother, I'm a twin. And remember my first guitar was, I remember one Christmas, actually had to be about 7 or 8, but when that was before I started playing. I remember my brother and I wanted a set of drums for Christmas, and he wanted a guitar, and the drums and the guitar arrived, and I went on the drums and didn't have a clue, and he went on the guitar and didn't have a clue, and we just swapped. So he became a drummer and I became a guitar player.
Right. Does your brother still play the drums?
He's a very successful composer. He does play the drums, but he's a very successful composer in the UK now. He wrote with a singer called Desiree. He wrote a big song called Kissing You that was in Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet. And so, yeah, he writes a lot of documentary music for Netflix and companies like that now. So he's still very active, yeah.
Right. So I understand, Keith, you also write, you also compose music for TV and film as well, right?
I do, to a lesser extent, yes. I have done in the past. I used to work for a company in Singapore, mainly in the 90s. I used to go to Singapore and make TV commercials for them. I used to do the music for TV commercials in their studios in Singapore. I worked for United Overseas Bank, Barclaycard, Singapore Airlines, and I was doing TV commercial music for them in those days, which was quite lucrative, yeah.
I was searching for your name, and the IMDb came up, and I think it's your name is there, and then you were actually in a movie as well, right?
I was, yes. Again, that came through music, though.
Right.
My brother and I, well, my brother was working on the movie's themes to the score. And we were doing a music session in Abbey Road, actually, for the film. And the guy who was, whose film it was, Ricky Gervais, he was saying, I've still got to audition a bat. There's a couple of scenes. We were doing some music for some of the scenes. And some of the scenes actually were that they needed a band. So there was my brother and I, and we had a band in the studio doing the soundtrack, and which was a typical thing of Ricky Gervais. He said, well, you lot might as well do it. You might as well, if you're recording it, you might as well be in the movie, you know. So
right.
We ended up being in the movie as well. That's where my IMDb, that's where my IMDb acting status
right. Came. Right. You mentioned Abbey Road. So I recently listened, I think a few weeks back, I listened to the Beatles' Abbey Road album. And I mean, I've seen a lot of artists perform also in Abbey Road, like some of the bands they record, and they do live albums there as well. It's probably been a magical place, right? Tell me a little bit about that.
It is a magical place, yeah. Obviously, the history of the place is through the Beatles. Bearing in mind, it was a major EMI recording studio before. It was the Beatles that made, I mean, Edward Elgar and all the classical composers, the contemporary classical composers used to record in Abbey Road. But it was the Beatles that put the studio on the map. Yeah, and you know their recordings. And when you go to the studio, you can feel in Studio 2, particularly. They've kept the original fittings of the studio because of the its heritage.
Right.
You know, there's McCartney's Bluthner piano there, and you know, a lot of the Hammond organ and things like that, they're all there preserved really for posterity because of the Beatles. And you do feel the history when you go in. It is quite an awe-inspiring place to be, and it's an amazing place to say you've worked on music.
Right.
And of course the engineers there are absolutely amazing. So it's not just the history. It is a first class. It really is a first class facility. It's massive as well. You know, there's a lot of the orchestral sessions for movies are done there too. still. Right. So yeah, it's still a very, very happening place.
Right. So Keith, you also work with several, I mean, a lot of artists also, you perform with a lot of them. Tell me a little bit about that and tell me, like, how did you became a professional guitarist? Like, you know, wanted to play guitar, and how did that journey, you know, started?
Well, it was, by the time we got to 11, 12 year old, there was nothing else but music for us. You know, it wasn't, we had no other focus on anything really. We went to a good grammar school, but we didn't get any qualifications. Our obsession was the band that we were in at the time. And fortunately, actually, the band that we were in as kids got a record deal, and you know, we were in a quite a successful pop band in the 70s in the UK, my brother and I. So and that's where it started. We were very lucky. We answered an advert in a local paper there was a manager looking to sign a band to try to get a record deal with, and he chose us. And you know, it was a bit of a slog for a few years, but we got a record deal and we had three hits. And yeah, that really was the start of it. And of course, being a teenager though in a band, in like a pop band, there's only a certain shelf life with that. So, you know, and obviously by then we were very firmly established in what we wanted to do. My working with other artists came primarily from the success that I had with my first band in the 70s, then being the name, you know, and just generally getting on with people, meeting people as we went along and staying in touch. And then when the band broke up, it seemed natural for me to go and work with some of the people that I'd already built relationships, friendships with.
Right.
I don't think it was particularly because I was a great player or anything. You know, I was at that age, you know, I my face fit, and I was a good enough player, and I learned. I was very diligent in learning everyone's songs and making sure I was there on time and making sure that, you know, I wasn't a liability to anybody. So I think a lot of the time people think, well, you know, you get all that work because you must be so amazing as a guitar player. And I think it was less that than the fact that I just was very diligent and very professional, and I learned my songs, and I, as I say, I turned up on time, sober and clean. And so, you know, I think that carried me in good stead over those years.
So it's not just talent, it's just talents, but plus work ethics, right? Like
work ethics, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. You can have all the talent in the world. If you've got no work ethics, it shows through.
Right. You know,
I think there's a lot of talented. There are more talented people didn't make it, but there are a lot more people with work ethics did, if you know right. what I mean.
Right. So Keith, the band that you are having now, which is called Attack, I'm not going to ask why you named the band Attack, because I assume it's your name. So is this something that happened spontaneously, or is this something that you've been thinking of doing for some time? Like, how did this Attack band lineup came up?
Well, again, it's going back to the pandemic, the lockdown situation, and I've always written guitar music. I've always written rock music. I've never always had an outlet for it, been busy with other things. Again, it was lockdown, and I've always wanted my own band, and the time constraints on that, be working with other people, were always, you know, It was always prohibitive, and you know, because you need a heck of a lot of time and space to be able to develop your own, write your own music to the point where you can go out and play it live, which is something it's always been a kind of dream of mine to do. But, you know, just the demands of being a professional musician have actually always got in the way of that. But having the pandemic, I thought, well, I got industrious, I got writing, and I started recording. And, you know, and I've been playing with some local bands in the north, and one guy instrumental, in fact, is here now, a guy called David Williams. He was very encouraging to me and said, look, I'll help you. If you want to put a band together, if you want to go in the studio, I'll help you do that. I'll facilitate the means for you to do that, which was a great, which pretty much having somebody else on my side about it. Right. Was the thing that that really spurred me on most to do it.
So who's the lineup of Attack, and how did you get these guys together?
Well, they're all great musicians. Again, I built a big kind of friendship circle of some really fine musicians and players in the UK, and I just. What I did was I cherry-picked to the best I could the ones that I really wanted to work with. I'd worked with Chris, the bass player, before on different bands. He plays in a very big rock band here called Thunder. Mm-hmm. Lee was new to me. The singer Lee was new to me, but people he said to me, when they knew I was putting this together, they said, you must check this guy out. So he was an incredible singer. So obviously, he had to come in. And I wanted a Hammond keyboard player. I didn't want a piano player, synth player. I wanted a really strong Hammond player for the sound I was creating. I found Nick Foley, who was playing in some Deep Purple tributes and things like that. And the drummer was, you know, he was playing with bands like AC/DC when he was filling in for AC/DC and people like that. So I couldn't really have got a better group of people together in terms of, because I wanted it to be a really strong live. I wanted everyone to be really strong, you know. So that's where the band that arrived. I didn't care about any image as such. I just wanted the best. I wanted the best I could get in terms of their talent. And again, going back to the fact that they're all very professional guys. They're all very, you know, they turn up when it's time to rehearse. They learn the tunes. I give them an open book too. If they want to change anything, I'll listen to them, you know, too. So although the music comes from me, we're a democracy when it comes to the certain things, you know. Lee will change a melody in the way he sings. I'm quite happy with that. He's also started writing some of the lyrics now, rather than me dictate what he should be singing and what he shouldn't be singing. I'd rather do a co-write with him and let him come up with the lyrics and the melodies. So I've been lucky.
Even though his name is Lee Small, but his voice is not small, right? He has a big voice.
Yeah, huge voice, yeah. Yeah, he does. Yeah, it's funny. I think that too.
Yeah, so this single that you guys put out, My New Addiction, which I actually listened to a couple of times already. Tell me about this song. What addiction is this, and what are you trying to say on this song?
About the addiction side, it was really, I think, addiction isn't just, you know, drugs and alcohol and things like that. I think it's more about the way people become addicted to other people, you know, people's obsessions and addictions to other people. It's really about that. It's about how somebody can get under, just when you're thinking that your life's fairly sedate and calm, somebody comes along and turns everything upside down for you. And it's very difficult. I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know? And it, some people do almost like get addicted to other people. It's not always a bad thing, but it's not always a good thing, you know? So I wanted to write about the human side of addiction when it comes to relationships rather than alcohol or drugs or anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get what you mean. Like the, sometimes we get addicted to that. In a way, we behave like we're addicted to the attention and affection that we get. If we don't get that attention for some reason, then we'll probably have a withdrawing symptoms, right?
Yeah, you're going to have the withdrawal, yeah. And, you know, when people get parted and they miss each other and they start going crazy, and it's almost like if you remove somebody from somebody else, there's like a, you know, it becomes like an obsession with some people, you know. And so I just noticed that, and I thought, well, there's not people, they write about love and they write about the kind of the niceties of relationships. Not a lot of people write about the obsessions that people get with each other, you know?
Right.
So really that it's based around that, really.
Right. So Keith, now that the world is opening up and you're able to do, I mean, you'll be able to go and perform. So what are you looking forward to the rest of the year and the next year?
Well, I'm looking forward to this afternoon. We're going to be rehearsing for our first live show on tomorrow.
Right.
In Bradford in England. We're on a festival supporting a band called Inglorious that are big here. And that's great. We're right in the middle of the bill. I don't want to rush into topping the bills. I don't want to rush into being the headline act yet at all. This is not about that. This, what we're about and what I'm about with the band is to be in the right place, playing to the right audiences, not necessarily, you know, the headline act. I just want us to be making good music. And as I say, my focus has always been, because I've been a live player, even when I write the songs, when I write the music and write the tunes, it's about being, I don't write anything we can't do in concert. I don't write anything that requires extra tech or extra musicians. When I write and when we record very much in mind that we want it to sound the same when we go out and play it live. So, you know, there's no point to me putting an orchestra on something if you can't have it in the show. So New Addiction, if you listen to it, it's just very much straight ahead, guitar, keyboard, drums, bass, and a singer. And that's really, all the shows pretty much, I think, you know, looking at the great rock and roll bands in the world, they're all a lot more simple in their approach to playing shows than, you know, if you take AC/DC, for instance, who I think are the greatest rock and roll band in the world, their approach to doing live shows is very straight ahead. There's a lot of kind of theatrics, but the music itself's very, you know, it's coming out as is. I don't think there's anything like extra tracks or anything hidden, you know? And that's been my approach with the band.
Right.
We'll soon see, because tomorrow, as I say, tomorrow's our first live show tomorrow.
Wow, nice. So you have the My New Addiction. I saw that in Spotify as well. And you also have a 2021, you have a track called Nine Lives, which you released also, right? As Keith Attack, right?
I did, yeah, because that was before I had the band. Since then we've re-recorded it. And I've taken my voice off, which I thought was okay, but it was nowhere near as good as Lee. So basically, I thought, well, I'll take my voice off. We'll have a look at the arrangement. I didn't really change the arrangement, but I've put Lee on it. I've Lee has done his version now. So, and that'll probably be the next thing. I'm not sure yet, but it'll probably be the next release. And it's certainly going to be, I think, the title of the album as well.
Nine Lives, right.
Nine Lives, yeah.
Right. I really love that title. I think we, Aerosmith also has an album called Nine Lives before, right? You remember?
Who's that, sorry?
Aerosmith also has.
Oh, right. No,
yeah, yeah. They have a famous album called Nine Lives.
All right. Okay. No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So Keith, what's your message to the people who's going to watch this video and listen to this audio, this interview?
All I hope is that people listen to our music, the ATAC music, and relate to something that, you know, that evokes, because it's fairly much in the classic rock vein, and I just want it to evoke something in somebody, some excitement, you know, and have the same feeling I do when I listen to bands like AC/DC and you know, a lot of the bands like that, and I get this kind of, and Van Halen and people like that, and I get a real sense of excitement. And I all I want is if I can do that to other people with the band, then that's great. You know, if I can evoke that same feeling as I get listening to rock and roll, right, when people listen to the band and come and see the band live, then I'll be happy. I just want that, you know, I want that when I was a kid, going to a show, going to a gig at the university or a pub or something like that, and feeling that excitement of watching and listening to a band. I just want the same for us, you know?
Right. Keith, I can say, because I've listened to so many rock bands, so many songs, and I've listened to your tracks also. So I can say that it gives that feeling of, you know, listening to a great rock song.
Oh, that's brilliant. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Right. Keith, anybody you want to shout out to?
I just want to shout out to everybody and anyone who will give us a chance to just come and listen to the music, come and see the shows, follow the band. We have our own website, ATAC, www.ataqband.com. And I just want a new sea of music lovers and fans to come and follow the band, and just to enjoy some good old rock and roll. And I couldn't think of anybody else I'd rather shout out to than to people who I want to get our music across to, you know?
Right, Keith. So I would just like to shout out to Dave for reaching out to, you know, set up this show, this interview.
Dave Williams he's an absolute godsend, you know. We've done this together. We're partners in crime on this. He's completely, I couldn't have done this without him, really. Got to this point so far. He's my sounding board, and I'm his sounding board. We're from the same part of the world. We've known each other on and off all our lives. And you know, he's not like, I haven't gone down south looking for a business partner. I needed a kindred spirit, really, who got it, you know, and who understood what it was I was trying to do, and who encouraged me to do it as well. I don't think I'd have done it really without him, to be honest. I, you know, sometimes you need somebody to say to you that you can do this, you know. Mm. So I'll give him a shout out then.
So Keith, thanks for joining this podcast, and I really enjoy talking to you. I'm looking forward to your more music from you, and all the best with your live shows.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Well, we're not short of new, you know. There's loads of music to come and loads to look forward to. So I appreciate that.
Right. Thanks, Keith. Have a great day ahead.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.